much.
Okay, we will reconvene. That went faster and more smoothly than I thought it would. That's great. Okay, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our next testifier is Sarah Mullins with Isaiah.
Welcome, Ms. Mullins.
Thank you. Hello, Senator Dibble and members of the Transit Subcommittee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today on behalf of Transportation Choices 2020. My name is Sarah Mullins. I am a member of St. Luke's Catholic Church in St. Paul and chair of Isaiah's Metropolitan Equity Committee. I also work for 3M, where I am a research chemist working in the area of nanotechnology. But today I'm here to speak for Isaiah. Isaiah is an interfaith organization of 85 congregations across Minneapolis, St. Paul, the metro suburbs, and St. Cloud. Our members share common faith values and a vision for the future of Minnesota as a hopeful community made strong by ensuring economic and social opportunities for everyone. Isaiah Leaders' aim is to connect our faith values to action, to create systemic change on matters of real importance to the community. Our core faith value, simply put, is that everyone matters. Every person in Minnesota has human dignity that is to be respected. We are individuals, but fundamentally we are called to be in relationship with each other. And there are times when we are called to act collectively. Isaiah leaders have faith in the democratic process to hear the voice of the community, to have legislators work with us as partners in making decisions for both the short and long-term health of the community. So why did I start this transit campaign? Well, for 9 years as an undergraduate and a graduate student, I was a full-time student and researcher living on a stipend of less than $1,000 a month. I had no car and was totally dependent on the transit system. I scheduled my life around the bus. When I wanted to go grocery shopping or to a community meeting, I faced the same challenge as every transit-dependent person. Can I get there? And once I'm there, can I get home? I made many practical accommodations, like moving to an apartment within a block of the grocery store. But despite this, living in an inadequate transit system was wearing me down. You see, my profession is science, but my faith calls me to serve the community. I want to be part of making a better future for myself and for the people I love, whether it is judging a junior high science fair or attending a community meeting at my church. What was hardest for me in those transit-dependent years was that I could not make commitments to people. I might arrange a cab to attend a special event, but I can't afford that, or I couldn't afford that, for routine or ongoing activities. I am acutely aware of what I missed during that time because the bus didn't go there or it didn't run at the time I needed it. Today, in Minnesota, I am grateful to have a car so that now I can commit to activities like testifying here at the Capitol, even if the time and date change. Just as I had to opt out of many activities then, I am keenly aware of when it happens to others now. I can't give a ride to every single person I invite to a community meeting. I know that the lack of adequate transportation is a barrier to many Minnesotans who want to opt in to the very activities that create the high quality of life that we think of when we think of Minnesota. Isaiah envisions a statewide transportation system in which everyone can get around, including those unable to drive. For the last 4 years, Isaiah leaders have been talking transit in our congregations. We understand that we live in community and that systemic injustice that affects one affects us all. We also know Minnesotans share our abundant resources to solve problems for the common good. We launched our transit legislative campaign in front of 4,500 people, including over 40 state legislators, at our Faith and Democracy meeting in October 2004. And I know some of you were there. Isaiah joined the Transit Partners Coalition to to work with community organizations and policy experts to put our faith values into action and to create a funding proposal that provides adequate, stable funding for transit. We know this need exists beyond the Twin Cities Metro. Our members in St. Cloud from the Belle Claire Estates Mobile Home Park live 2 miles outside of the bus service area. Last month, at your town hall meeting, a recent immigrant spoke of trying to get to ESL classes to fulfill her dream of integrating into her new community. The park manager spoke of teens who want to work at the local Crossroads Mall but have no way to get there. These are people who today want to opt in to the greater St. Cloud community. These kinds of stories are why we are at your legislative hearings, at the Metro Transit hearings on service cuts, and hosting our own discussions. Since 2004, Isaiah has hosted over 100 town hall meetings and forums on transit in our congregations. It's not hard to sustain this conversation. We know in our guts that transportation hits at the core of accessing opportunity in everyday life. With every meeting, a new voice is added that deepens Isaiah's collective commitment to this purposeful investment in the well-being of all Minnesotans. I speak tonight on behalf of all of those Isaiah members, more than 50,000 people from our congregations who support the Transportation Choices 2020 bill. We have a buzz in the community. This bill addresses an urgent need for a transportation system that truly serves the community. And yes, we are ready to raise taxes. In providing a stable, adequate source of funding for transit, we would move toward fulfilling the promise of a state that works for all of its residents. Now is the time to move our current reality closer to our vision, not limit our vision so that it fits our current reality. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mullins. Any questions from the committee for Ms. Mullins? All right. Thank you very much. And Ms. Mullins, I did, I don't know if I mentioned to you, I think I did mention to you that after the St. Cloud hearing, we drove out to the Belle Claire Estates. It was it's very telling to traverse that just in a car to see how remote that low-income housing is. The service workers who live out there are from the city line, and it's pretty astonishing to see that folks have to make up that distance on foot or by some means to get to the jobs that are, you know, just a few miles down the road, but pretty far if you don't have transportation.
Right, on a day-to-day basis, that's 2 miles is a very long distance.
And on that day, it was very cold.
Yes, it was.
Senator Steven.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next, Matt Hollinshead and Ben Zimmerman from the Sierra Club are here. How about David Green from Isaiah, Mr. Chair?
Right. Mr. Green. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify tonight. My name is David Green. I'm a resident of the Uptown area of Minneapolis, a member of St. Luke Catholic Church in St. Paul, and I strongly support the Transportation Choices 2020 bill. I'm a software engineer and computer architect at Cray Incorporated in Mendota Heights. Since 2004, I've also been working as co-chair of Isaiah's public transit campaign. Why do I care about transit? Well, I'd like to tell you that story. I grew up in Hopkins, went away to college, and decided to pursue my graduate studies at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. While there, I had the opportunity to serve in interurban Detroit. I became intimately familiar with the poverty and inequity in the Detroit metro area and learned about how the lack of public transit cuts off many people from opportunity. When I moved back to the Twin Cities, to my home, I saw many of the same destructive trends right here and became alarmed about transportation and transit funding policy that is leading us down a path we do not want to traverse. I needed to fight for my home. I made a conscious choice to purchase a house near good transit access. I planned my living arrangements around the Hiawatha line. Inspired by coworkers who bus, bike, and even unicycle to work, I began to use public transit for my commute. I made transit an integral part of my life because using it is a living out of values that I hold very deeply. Values like strong community, equity, and fairness. Values like honor of everyone's human dignity. On the bus, there are rich people, poor people, people of all races. On the bus, there are all these different people that, for whatever limited time, share space and experience, and there's something very human and sacred about that. I wanted that in my life. As a typical West Side suburban kid, I'd heard bits and pieces about places like Phillips and Powderhorn Park. Mostly I heard they were places to avoid. The daily bus ride through those neighborhoods shows me that these are not far-off places unrelated to me. They're quite literally just down the street. I discovered wonderful places to go, great food and shops, and a vibrant immigrant community. No doubt these neighborhoods, like many in our region, have challenges, but I know that their challenges are my challenges, and what happens there affects me deeply and directly. I sometimes wonder if a fear of discovering this fundamental truth of our connectedness and interdependence is what holds us back from providing access everywhere for everyone. I live in Minneapolis, go to church in St. Paul, work in Mendota Heights, have a sister and her family in Maple Grove, and parents in Hopkins. I'm not just a resident of Minneapolis. I'm a member of the Twin Cities metro community, and I want everyone to be able to enjoy all of it. In 2005, I and others in Isaiah and our Transit Partners Coalition worked with many of you to pass the bipartisan comprehensive transportation bill, but the governor vetoed it. There were real consequences from this failure to serve the people of Minnesota. The Metropolitan Council raised fares and cut bus service. I attended almost all of the hearings on those cuts. So many people begged the council not to cut their bus service and cause them to lose their jobs. The disabled want to be part of the community but need transit, even to just go see a movie and go to church. The bus cuts removed a line that used to run from my workplace right into St. Paul, very near to St. Luke. Many of our meetings about transit happen at St. Luke, and I find it ironic and more than a little sad that those days we have meetings about public transit are the very days I cannot take transit to work. I could tell you many other stories about my grandmother who wanted to testify at the Capitol in 2005 but couldn't get here, stories about Isaiah colleagues who rely on transit to get to work, stories about my concerns over what my parents will do when they have to give up the car keys. Today, you have the opportunity to share in our vision of a transit system that serves everyone, where no one is left behind, unable to get to work or to the doctor. A vision of a state where we don't primarily concern ourselves with who is paying for what, but rather whether we are serving our neighbors. As a Minneapolis resident, I am happy to share the abundance of my city with others in the metro area, and I'm happy to share our metro region's abundance with Greater Minnesota. I'm very glad to pay a little more in taxes so that we can make this vision a reality. My faith has a tradition of stories and parables. One of my favorites is the parable of the faithful servants. Jesus explains the parable with these words: "Much will be required of the servant entrusted with much, and still more will be demanded of the person entrusted with more." Our state is blessed with great abundance. We are not too poor to meet the needs of our neighbors. It comes down to choices. Will we choose to build a community that includes everyone, or will we choose to leave some people out? Will we choose to build community by sharing our abundance, or will we continue to live in fear and isolation where we fight to hold on to our own? Will we choose to govern and measure ourselves by what we can't do, or decide that we can do? We can do this. We have a plan for a great public transit system. We have the abundant resources to make it a reality. We know that this bill is the only one that meets the statewide need for public transit. The decisions before you are not mere policy negotiations. These are moral decisions with real consequences. Put aside divisions of party, geography, and anything else getting in your way and pass this bill. This is not a difficult request. It's a simple choice. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Any questions from the committee for Mr. Green? All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming, Mr. Chair.
Senator Salzman.
You know, about 5 hours ago, we sat in the Transportation Committee, and I was pretty depressed when I left because we were talking about all of these needs and highways and where we've had deaths. And this is such a wonderful, a very different climate tonight. And so I'm just delighted to be here because to have this room full of people and such energy and excitement. I just felt I needed to say something because you're all here, and thank you. But I think there is great hope with this, and we have great opportunities. It's just, as our last speaker said, you know, we have to pass the bill. And that's going to not just take the people at this table, it's going to take the people in this room.
Well said, Senator Salzman. I wasn't depressed by this afternoon's hearing. Because I thought people were speaking to the need. They weren't talking about how we're going to meet the need, granted, which is the difference with this hearing. But we do, you know, it was about a vision and a need. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But I think, Mr. Chair, that it was also there are so many unmet needs, and that I think that to recognize all of those was not really maybe depressing, but it was a real reality check, as some reporters would say.
Indeed. All right. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Michael Noble from Fresh Energy is here tonight as well.
Great. Welcome, Mr. Noble.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for having me. My name is Michael Noble, and I serve as the executive director of a not-for-profit organization called Fresh Energy. We mostly do our work up here at the legislature on energy policy. I'm here tonight to speak in favor of the bill and the initiatives of the Transportation Choices 2020 Coalition. First, by way of personal introduction, I'm a transit rider, have been a one-car family since 1987. We raised two kids, have them both in college, and I did that primarily by being a transit dependent by choice. I have the advantage of being able to choose the location of where my work is and choose the location of my home, so that's an advantage most people don't have. But I've seen how the transit system has gotten more and more expensive and the service has gotten of less and less quality over 20-year riding in transit. I'm also was appointed by Mayor Coleman to the Central Corridor Downtown Task Force that's looking at the redevelopment opportunities for the Central Corridor. And I know that the main issues that are on the table in transportation policy are issues of opportunity and access to work and dealing with congestion and reshaping our development patterns. But what I want to talk about tonight is how transportation policy is a core part of energy policy. And I think everyone in the room knows that what we do deeply need in the state is a stable and reliable and guaranteed long-term funding source for transit, for public transit, to create a modern and innovative transportation economy that matches the needs of the 21st century. And I just want to talk quite specifically about two things that might rarely come up in the transportation policy debates, which are realities of the 21st century. One of them is the issue of American oil dependency and the issue of the inevitable decline in global oil production, which is a reality of the 21st century. And the other is, briefly, I'd like to talk about the issue of global warming. Every United States president, going back to Richard Nixon, has announced an initiative to reduce America's reliance on foreign oil. And every single president, going back to Richard Nixon, has presided over an increasing reliance on foreign oil. When I was in high school, America produced nearly 75% of all the oil it consumed. Today, my kids are coming out of high school, and America is importing nearly 55% of the oil it consumes. And when my kids are my age, it's projected that America will import nearly 75% of all the oil it consumes. I don't think I have to stress how our oil dependency impacts our foreign policy choices. The fact that two-thirds of all the world's remaining oil is in some of the most dangerous and unstable places in the world. you know, I could tick off the top 10 oil reserves in the world, and it would include countries like Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Venezuela, Nigeria, Russia. So a lot of the places that we may not, we might not be willing to invest our own money, or might not be willing to be confident that we have a stable and reliable source of oil, that's where all the oil is left in the world. In addition to this oil dependency problem, there's the additional wrinkle that oil is a finite resource. There's only so much, and then there is no more. And there's a spate of books that have come out on this subject over the last few years, and some of them are better than others. But what they all point to is that there's an inevitable physical reality that the amount of oil that's being produced annually will at some point begin to decline. And the range of debate, some people would argue that that declining oil production is going to happen nearly immediately this year, last year, next year. And the more optimists might say that it might happen 10 years from now or 12 years from now or 15 years from now. My view is that it hardly matters which point of view is correct. When global oil production begins to steadily decline, steadily and persistently and irreversibly decline, and global oil demand continues to inevitably, persistently, and continuously rise, that's going to be a shock to the economy that folks have no clue what that will mean. And so it's really our economic security, our global security, security of our families and our communities that requires that we have a modern and innovative transportation system that will begin to help us wean ourselves from oil dependency. Now, Governor Pawlenty, in an energy policy speech on December 12th this year, which he got broad praise for and a lot of enthusiastic congratulations, he called for reducing Minnesota's use of fossil fuels by some 15% over the next decade. And yet nowhere in his speech was any connecting the dots that an important part of our energy dependency is our oil problem, and it is not all going to be solved by switching to biofuels. I'll clue you in. It has to be solved in large part by increasing the number of transportation choices that are available to us. The second reality of the 21st century that I want to briefly touch on is the subject of global warming, global climate change. I mean, you had this unprecedented hearing, including many of the committees. I think eight committees in House and Senate attended this hearing on global warming. Bills are now moving through the legislature that will address that problem. Today, for example, in the House Environment Committee, a bill moved out of committee that will set a state goal of reducing our global warming emissions. Now, are ready for this? Reduce our emissions by 80% over the next 45 years. This means that we have to figure out how to run our transportation economy on something other than oil. In large part, we have to reduce our reliance on coal in the electricity sector and our reliance on oil in the transportation sector. Those are the two engines of global warming, oil in transportation and coal in electricity. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which came out with its fourth major report just about 2 weeks ago, it brought this call up to kind of a clarion call level that policymakers must respond to the fact that the Earth is literally cooking, and we have to begin to turn around, again, the ever-increasing emissions and start to have emissions go down. And not only are Minnesotans passionate about having public transit, Minnesotans are passionate about addressing this global warming problem. Over 17,000 Minnesotans last year attended public fora in communities, in churches, in civic centers, and places all over Minnesota, from Bemidji to Woodbury to Eagan to Northfield, all over Minnesota, audiences of 500, 600, 800, 1,000 people on a Thursday night or a Saturday night coming to learn about not only what is the problem related to global warming, what are the solutions related to global warming. And transit is a very, very critical part of the picture. We need really dramatic increases in the quality of our transportation infrastructure, transit infrastructure. And with that, I'll close my testimony by again reminding you that the core goal here is to have a stable, reliable, guaranteed, long-term funding source that supports transportation choices. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Noble. Any questions for Mr. Noble? All right. Thank you. All right, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next, Michelle Summers from the Amalgamated Transit Union.
Welcome, Ms. Summers. Yes. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. My name is Michelle Summers. I represent over 2,000 employees that work at Metro Transit and MB Transit in Southern Minnesota in Burnsville. I'm not here only as a union president, but as a transit advocate in support of the Transportation Choices 2020 bill. We have all watched as light rail and bus ridership has increased and is at its highest levels in 22 years. What isn't talked about is that that's been done with a cut in service and a raise in fares. The drivers and employees of Metro Transit take this very seriously. Modern technology has cut the routes so tight that most drivers speed just to make the route on time to be dependable for the customers that are riding. They need to get to doctor's appointments, to work, to school, to daycare, and the other needs that they have. The employees of Metro Transit would like to see increased service and more routes for the community. I would be misspeaking if I were to say that more jobs did not benefit the union. They obviously do. But members of our union are also public servants, and we take that very seriously. Last Friday on the snow day, Metro Transit only lost 14 pieces of work in the AM. That's amazing when you talk about over 1,000 routes going out. But that's due to the dedication that the employees and the Metro Transit staff have to the community. We all have spouses and kids and family that ride the buses, and we take it very seriously. We see riders with different disabilities, single parents, and elderly that have no other means of transportation. We see standing loads throughout the week and numerous ones even on weekend because the service has been cut so much. I truly hope that we can all see the real daily need for good, reliable transportation for all members of the community. And switching the room of tonight's hearing was a great thing for many of the people standing. Unfortunately, when there's a standing load on the bus, it's not as easy as switching a room. We need the buses out there, and we need more of them. In closing, I would just like to say that please keep in mind that this Transportation 2020 bill, when they call it transportation choices, I call it transportation rights. The community has the right to be able to get where they need to go, and we have the obligation to serve them in a positive, effective, and reliable manner. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Summers, and thanks to you and everyone, all of your colleagues and peers, for your excellent service to the public every day, getting folks around. We appreciate that tremendously. Any questions for Ms. Summers? All right. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Matt Hollinshead and Ben Zimmerman from the Sierra Club are both now here.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hollinshead, Mr. Zimmerman.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Matt Hollinshead. I'm Transportation Chair of the North Star Chapter of the Sierra Club. Ben Zimmerman is one of our members from Falcon Heights. I'm going to concentrate on the chapter's position, and Ben has some individual thoughts that he'd like to share with you. Thank you for this hearing, and thank you for Senate File 1032. It is long overdue. Our chapter has 24,000 members statewide, and over half that membership in the Twin Cities region. These members are involved in a very diverse spectrum of local, regional, statewide, national, and global environmental issues and concerns. There is not one of our members or our concerns that is not impacted somehow, directly or indirectly, by transportation and especially surface transportation. This is especially the case with Minnesota's concentration on a single mode, motor vehicle transportation, at great expense, in our opinion, to our environment now and in the future, and also at the expense, in our opinion, of all other modes of surface transportation. There are at least five great environmental impacts that can and will be addressed, in part at least, by the prompt passage and implementation of Senate File 1032, Transportation Choices 2020. One already touched upon is energy conservation. Second is emissions that are directly harmful to health, especially particulates and toxins. A third, natural resource protection, i.e. wetlands, parks, and open space, wildlife habitat, and complete ecosystems. Four, water pollution from runoff, and five, climate change. You are no doubt, at least I hope, already familiar in some depth with all of these issues, and time is short, so I'm not going to go into statistics or great detail. Data is readily available and agreed upon, and we, among many others, can and have provided it. Our transportation priorities in the Sierra Club, you may already know, include a world-class transit system for the Twin Cities region, especially commuter rail and light rail transit, equitable and reliable funding sources for transit both in the Twin Cities and in greater Minnesota, intermodal connections so that pedestrians, cyclists, the young, the old, and those who want to access nature can travel without enforced reliance on the road and the car, air quality levels that eliminate alerts and rising levels of asthma and other respiratory disorders, curtailment of the uncontrolled expansion of impervious paved surface areas, especially for parking, that comes with a monoculture of auto-oriented development, and the possibility that Minnesota can work its way out of dependence on foreign or domestic sources of energy that are responsible for ever more obvious levels of damage to the environment that, the more time we wait, become less and less remediable. As one example, let me point out that commuter and light rail transit concentrate energy combustion at controllable points instead of distributing it across millions of independent vehicles. They also drastically reduce energy consumption per traveler per mile. And I want to add our voice to those pointing out that present and future demand for more transportation choices will not come just from the newborns and those moving into Minnesota. The Sierra Club believes economic factors will strongly influence behavior changes. It already happened within the past 2 years in the immediate effect on transit ridership of price spikes at the gasoline pump. There is no more reliable cause of travel behavior change than increase in the many different costs of driving, and we believe cost increases are and will be inevitable and continuing. We also believe the so-called love affair with the automobile is changing. Besides cost, congestion, tension, and demographics are removing the luster from the road, which is not the open road of legend anymore. Talk of funding shortfalls and tolls has begun to educate the public as to the true economic and tax costs of our dependence on roads and motor vehicles. Non-drivers are no longer stereotyped, as until so recently they have been, often by transit opponents, as mere dependents in need of a mobility safety net. More people of more different backgrounds are choosing to live together in cities to telecommute, bicycle walk, take transit, especially since the Hiawatha Light Rail Transit Line opened. These trends are part of regional competition. Part of the appeal of places like Portland and Boston, Denver and Phoenix today are that the young and the old alike understand their evolving commitment to lifestyles different from one-size-fits-all auto-dependent mobility. The Sierra Club believes we must embrace this new future, not hide from it. Senate File 1032 and Transportation Choices 2020 can jumpstart us down the track to greater environmental health, human health, economic health, and social health. And I want to add that I just got this today in the mail. This is one of about three or four books. The three others are larger than this. of the Stillwater Bridge EIS. We tried hard to get meaningful transit as a component of that project. What we ended up with was an unfunded feasibility study, which will be staffed by MnDOT, but that's the extent of what this $450, $464 million project will have if we don't pass this bill and provide a reliable source of transit funding. I'm not here to advocate for Wisconsin. We're in Minnesota, and that's who you represent. But I think this is a very significant example of the kind of imbalance that we end up with without the funding, reliability, and components that are in Senate File 1032. So thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thanks, Mr. Hollinshead. Any questions for the Ms. Farrier? You're absolutely right, Mr. Hollinshead, about doing the sort of planning and implementation of major transportation facilities without a comprehensive view of what we want for ourselves. I think we had that discussion in connection with Senator Saltzman's proposal to take a look at transit serving the East Metro a few days ago. Just to everyone in the room, I'll just draw your attention to the hour. It's 10 to 8. I know that this is a big bill, and we had planned to spend quite a bit of time last Friday, but we are unfortunately pressed given a variety of circumstances, and we have 10 additional bills to get through, and hope we can all get some sleep tonight. So so I would just once again remind folks that we need to be a little more brief than we plan to be in our testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to be very brief. My name is Ben Zimmerman, as Matt said. I'm a retired professor and a member of the Sierra Club. I just wanted to say a few things about busing or buses, which you already heard in detail from Ms. Summers. When I came here about 1963, the bus system was a very good one. There were many lines and a good frequency of bus travel, bus stops. However, as you are aware, over the last probably 10, 15 years, there have been strikes because of the limitation of funds and cutbacks in service. My daughter is a person that has really suffered from this. She depends entirely on the buses to get her to work at the St. Joe's Hospital in St. Paul. Over two strikes, we have managed to get her to work. And lately, because the bus service is more consistent but not better funded, she still is able to get to work with the bus system. However, I would greatly advocate the proposal, the 2020, where the bus service would be doubled through that bill if it passes and is funded. So this is my story. I would greatly appreciate the fact that this bill would pass, and it's all up to you and the citizens of Minnesota. Thank you very much for the privilege of testifying.
Thank you. Excellent. Any questions for the witness? Oh, thank you. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our final testifier is Dobria Stancevic from Transit for Livable Communities. Do you want to go?
I want to pass it to my sister.
Oh, she can come up.
Because of the time constraint.
Okay. Introduce yourself then.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Alexandra Jurevich, and I live in St. Paul, and I support Senate File 1032. My family is a one-car household, and I commute to work by bus. It's 5 miles each way. I've been doing this for 18 years since I moved to St. Paul from living overseas. I take the bus to work. I take the bus to my medical appointments. I take the bus to visit my sister. And I take the bus for work meetings. And I take the bus to my daughter's hockey games. These experiences have shown me that what we need are more reliable and speedier transit options. It takes 1 hour, believe it or not, to travel 10 miles. anywhere in the Twin Cities without even having to transfer. This past winter, I've had to travel from my work near, and I work near the state fairgrounds, to the Minneapolis-St. Louis Park border. With two transfers, this is a one-and-a-half-hour to two-hour commute, one way. I had a colleague who commuted from Northfield, Minnesota for 22 years, and it took only 50 minutes for her to travel by car. In 2 hours, I could be in Duluth. It's a ridiculous amount of time to spend commuting on public transportation. Recently, I also had to attend a conference at a hotel located on I-494 and Highway 100, 15 miles from home. It took 2 hours there each way that week. I mean, no wonder people abandon, you know, the notion of even taking transit, and they clog the freeways with their cars. You know, we need a transit system that is more efficient and rewards people to use it. Over the years, I'm getting more and more frustrated by the inconvenience and increased service cuts. And to make matters worse, I pay $80 a month to take the bus to work while my coworkers don't pay anything for parking. When our office was located two blocks from here in St. Paul, they had to pay for parking. But when we moved, you know, to near the state fairgrounds, they got free parking. I asked our office if I could get my bus pass subsidized, but was told tough luck, basically. And believe it or not, my employer is the state of Minnesota. Thanks for listening.
Good to know. Excellent. Appreciate that. Any questions for the witness? All right.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate your testimony. All right, Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, that wraps up testifiers that we have lined up. But
okay. So, well, great. Anything else from yourself, Senator Sieben? I see we have Senator
Pappas. Mr. Chair, yes, perhaps Senator Pappas just wants to speak in favor.
Sure,
of
Senator
this
Pappas
bill
will. I think your proposal is in the same spirit and vein as Senator Sieben. So, if you would like to speak to your
thank
bill.
You, Mr. Chairman, I'm really just here to say me too to Senator Sieben. I believe for a long time that we need another funding source for operation, and it looks like now construction dollars for light rail and operation for our bus system. That we don't have a sustainable system. Other metropolitan areas in other parts of the country have instituted the half-cent sales tax metro-wide to pay for operating costs for transit. It makes sense. We cannot continue to build ourselves out of our congestion problems. We have to offer an alternative, and I think what we've seen with the Hiawatha line is if you build it, they will come. And as author of the Central Corridor Bill, I'm very concerned that we're, you know, by using our traditional bonding bill, we're not going to have the capacity in our traditional bonding bill for the Central Corridor. And there's a lot of other interest in mass transit lines throughout the metropolitan area. We know there's an interest to the south. Senator Sieben is here, a strong supporter of the Union Depot. We know there's interest to the east with Senator Saltzman. We know there's interest to the west. So we really do desperately need another funding alternative. And so I just hope that the committee recommends it and it passes it on to the legislature.
Right.
Thanks. And I'll go back to my committee.
All right. Thank you, Senator Pappas. And just so you know, Senator Pappas, we're going to put all these funding bills on the table and try to fashion a larger bill for Friday consideration on Friday. All right. Senator Sieben, anything further?
No, Mr. Chair, I think that wraps it up for me, but okay. Thank you. And I should also just quickly thank the advocacy groups who have worked on this proposal for a long time. And, of course, your leadership too, Mr. Chair, on this bill. I appreciate the opportunity to carry it, but it's really because of your vision that I was able to carry it. So thank you for your leadership on this, too.
Well, thanks. Well, I appreciate your caring of Barry. What is without a doubt a very bold and a very necessary set of proposals to serve our metropolitan area. Any questions from the committee for Senator Sieben? Nope. Okay. Well, and I also want to echo the thanks to all the folks who came out tonight late and their understanding of our various circumstances, both from last Friday and today's unique set of circumstances, and appreciate everyone coming to tell the story. And I'll just echo what Senator Saltzman had to say. If we're going to get something done here, we still have a lot of work to do in the coming couple of weeks, both on the Senate side and the House side. But we can't forget, of course, the other branch of government that we are in negotiation with on these subjects as well. So got a busy couple of weeks ahead of us if we're going to fulfill the vision that's been articulated. And also, we have another hearing tomorrow night in Woodbury. The folks from around the metro and around the state have been gathering in great numbers to tell us what they want for their own future.
And on that topic, Mr. Chair, if I might, I truly hope that we have a great turnout, because for my community, we're not used to talking about transit and transportation, and for people to see the vision is very, very important. To hear about some of these exciting plans is just what they're waiting for. So I hope we have a wonderful turnout, and people come and shop and eat in Woodbury while they're on their way out there. I hope my Chamber of Commerce heard that.
All right. With that, we will lay both Senate File 1032 and Senate File 970 on the table. Okay, without objection. I'll tap the gavel just for the heck of it. All right. Why don't we take...
Thank you. And to Senator Dibble, thank you for being here this evening.
Thank you, Senator Saltzman.
We are looking at a Senate file that we do not have a number on yet. It authorizes counties to form joint powers boards to impose a 0.5% local sales tax for transportation and transit purposes. So, Senator Dibble, if you'd like to begin.
Great. Thank you, Senator Saltzman. Yes, this bill has not yet been formally introduced. Probably isn't a huge concern because we're not taking any formal action on it this evening. It underwent some last-minute revisions, and we'll also have I'll invite Commissioner McLaughlin to the table to help explain it. But very briefly, what this bill seeks to do is, of course, similar in spirit to Senator Sieben and Senator Pappas were discussing earlier, and that's establishing some new sources of revenue in the metro area for the purpose of transit, and actually it's a broader use than just transit. But this also provides for some a little bit different governance model over what to do with those funds. The crux of the bill is that it would allow for the establishment of a joint powers agreement between local jurisdictions so that there could be an opportunity for local units of government in the metropolitan area to undertake some cross-jurisdictional corridor transportation and transit planning. It prescribes some of the mechanisms by which they do that and the receipt of those funds and how they spend those funds. With that, Madam Chair, I'll introduce Commissioner Peter McLaughlin, who's with the Metropolitan Regional Transit Waste Development Board.
And thank you, Commissioner, for being here tonight. And if you would introduce yourself for the tape, please.
Thank you very much. My name is Peter McLaughlin. I'm chair of the Hennepin County Regional Railroad Authority and chair of the Metro Transit Ways Development Board. Myra Peterson, a member of the board from Washington County, is here, longtime member of the Metro Transit Ways Development Board. And I'm happy to report that there are county commissioners from at least Dakota, Ramsey, Hennepin, and Anoka still in Washington at the National Association of Counties meeting with our congressional delegation, to advocate for transit funding from Washington, which is a key part of what we need. So they're behind. They'd be here tonight in sort of holding hands with us, but they're in Washington doing work. And I just got off the plane from Washington myself.
Mr. McLaughlin actually hopped an early plane so he could be with us tonight to help present this proposal to the committee.
Thank you, and welcome again.
Well, thank you very much. The Metro Transit Ways Development Board, Madam Chair and members of the committee, is a seven-county regional, it's a joint powers board comprised of the seven county regional railroad authorities in the metropolitan area. We were a somewhat lonely voice in the mid-90s for rail transit investment, and we were joined by members of the Senate Transportation Committee and House Transportation Committees, and we moved forward on Hiawatha and the investment in North Star, in the Central Corridor, and in Red Rock, and in the late 90s, and now we've seen the great success that's come out of Hiawatha. And we are united in our vision, and have been over the years, in advocating for what our mantra is: more faster at this point. We would like to have more investment in transit, and we need it faster in order to keep this region strong. We thank this committee and the full Transportation Committee of the Senate for its support and trust in us and our vision in earlier years when it was a little bit lonely and a little bit dangerous. And I'm happy to report, and you saw some of the evidence tonight, that there's a lot of support out there now for this investment. And the reason for that is that there's a serious problem in this region. Even with MVEST, the Met Council's plan — I'm wondering if that's my phone that's doing that. I think I'll turn it off. Even with MVEST, the Met Council's plans for major transitway investment stalls out in 2014 with the completion of the Central Corridor. Just stalls out. We're going to have to wait until after 2020 to continue with the lines, to continue with investment in Red Rock and in Rush Line and in the Southwest Corridor, just to name three that are in the Met Council's second tier of investment. We can't afford to wait to jumpstart additional transit investment in this region until after 2020. Let me just repeat that. As a region and as a state, we believe at the Metro Transit Ways Development Board that we can't afford to wait that long. And so we do not have an adequate, dedicated source of funding to invest in the creation of a 21st century transit system in this region. It's the one big structural defect in our metropolitan area. Other metropolitan areas across the country with which we compete have these dedicated funds, and we need that, and that's what this bill is designed to do, is to provide that additional source of money that's going to allow us to invest in the transit ways that we need. Let me just give you a couple quick facts, and I know Metro Transit or the Transit for Livable Communities gave you a few. Second fastest rate of growth of congestion of any region in the country. Inflation on these big projects eats us alive. And if we have to wait from 2014 to 2020 to do these three projects or longer, inflation will just eat us alive and slow us down and it'll cost taxpayers more money. Transportation is the single greatest contributor in the United States to the growth of global warming, and we need to do something about it. And this is one significant way in which we, here in the state, here in the region, can contribute to a reduction in the forces leading to global warming by providing an alternative source of transportation. Hiawatha has been a spectacular success, on time, on budget, and way, way over projected ridership. We're into the projected ridership in the years after 2020, and it's consistently there, and people like the experience as well. So we've proven, I think, that we can provide a high-quality, affordable, reliable transit option to the people of Minnesota. Yes, even here in Minnesota, that's what the critics said. They're going to use it, and they like it, and that's what we want. We want more faster. That's what the Metro Transit Ways Development Board believes in. We believe that a strategy of investing in these transit improvements is going to provide huge dividends for our region. We have already in this region, through the work of the MTDB and the counties that are the members, with the cooperation and contribution of the state of Minnesota, we have brought in almost $500 million in federal money that's been invested in transitways. $500 million already. We're just shy of that right now. And that's money — we're not taking it away from roads in Minnesota. This is money that was going to be invested in transit, but if we didn't invest it here, it was going to be invested in Denver or Phoenix or Dallas or Portland or all these other regions around the country with which we compete. So we think it is important to have a strategy and a structure in place by which we can bring optimal amounts of federal money into this region. And again, if we stall out in 2014, we're going to be sitting for 6 years without bringing in federal money. That's a mistake. And we need to correct that. And this bill that Senator Dibble is authoring will help to provide that source of funding that we need to move forward. Counties, just to get to the structure of the bill, counties have played a leadership role in the development of a vision for this region. And we've made significant investments. Hennepin County invested $85 million in the Hiawatha Corridor. $85 million. We were doing the early planning, and that's being replicated by Washington County, by Ramsey County, by Anoka County, by Sherburn County, by Dakota County, each of those counties helps to plan and invest in right-of-way, places for park and rides and stations so that we can build the transit system of the future. And we're the ones that are putting down, creating the vision, creating the community consensus, and laying the groundwork for this new system. Just recently, Anoka and Hennepin provided cash flow dollars for the North Star project. We're cash flowing that North Star project, not the state, not the federal government, just as we did in Hennepin County for the Hiawatha project. So counties and their rail authorities have provided leadership, and what this bill provides is that counties would be able to join. Three or more counties could join together in a joint powers board, impose a sales tax on their residents, and use that for transportation purposes. That would be a dedicated source of funding that would allow for planning among those counties, planning in the region, so that we can have a systematic investment strategy, so that we can gain the optimal amount of federal funds that are available, and we can build a transit system in conjunction with road investments that's going to keep this economy in this region strong. It's going to reduce pollution, and it's going to help build stronger communities. That's our vision. This bill that Senator Dibble is carrying is very similar in philosophy to the AMC bill, which you'll be hearing later. And we've been working closely with them. There are a few little details that aren't exactly the same, but it shares the same basic philosophy, the same philosophy as Senator Sieben's bill, the same philosophy as the other bills that you're going to be hearing about, which is that we need more investment faster if we're going to continue to prosper. And so we are going to this joint powers agreement is something that counties are familiar with. We have many, many of them in place right now. It's an effective mechanism. It allows counties to negotiate among themselves and create a workable, sustainable relationship among themselves so that they can go forward with these projects. So we think that this is the year. This is the moment. I will tell you, I ride the Hiawatha a lot of the time. And my wife and I have cut down on our driving by about 40% already because of the Hiawatha. But I talk to people on that line. And they're from Dakota County. I think half of New Ulm was on the train during the high school football playoffs. And they're excited about riding the train. And a lot of them, the story is the same. They say, well, you know, I wasn't really for this when people were talking about it, but now I love it. And we like it. We're going to continue. And when are we going to get one in our part of the region? And that's the story that we're hearing from your area, Madam Chair, from other areas around this region. But we need a dedicated funding source that's going to be adequate to meet the demand and provide us with a transportation system for the 21st century. That's what this bill does, and I'm proud to be here supporting it, and I would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. And Senator Dibble, do you have other people to testify tonight?
I don't, Madam Chair. I was just going to say that, you know, we heard all the energy that came out of counties and locals the other day with studies, you know, and often the leadership, the spark, the initiative on corridor projects, both within and traverse jurisdictions within the metro and beyond, comes from the locals, and we've certainly seen that in Hiawatha and the Southwest, you know, all of them. And so this would be a way for folks to go out, raise the necessary revenues, do the studies, and then put the capital in place to get things going.
Excellent. Are there any questions from the committee? Okay, and what would you like to do with this bill, Senator Dibble? Is it information laid on the table?
Laid on the table.
Laid on the table. Okay, and would you like to move that? To waive?
It is thus done.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
And while Senator Dibble is coming up to the table, our next bill will be... Is Senator Larson in the room? Okay.
Yes.
I think what makes the most sense. Let me ask a question.
All right. We're going to pull up Senator Ingebrigtsen, who's been patiently waiting over here behind the column to present on his proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yes, I'm here in regards to Senate File 187. I think it's pretty straightforward. Not a whole lot of issues here. I don't have any testimony with me. What it basically is the MVEST money that we all voted on last election. And just a little summary here with regards to section number one, and amends the statute on deposit of MVEST revenues in accordance with the constitutional amendment passed in November 2006. The new revenue dedicated will be phased in over a five-year period. On and after July 1st, 2011, the allocation of MVEST revenues shall be basically approximately 60% to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund, 35% to the Metropolitan Area Transit Account, and 5% to Greater Minnesota Transit Account, effective July 1, 2007. Mr. Chair and committee members, the 2005 Transportation Finance Bill passed by the legislature included a constitutional amendment question which dedicates all MVEST proceeds to the transportation by fiscal year 2012. Currently, only 54% of MVEST revenues, about $300 million per year, is distributed to highways and transits, with the remaining $260 million deposited in the state's general fund. With passage of the MVEST constitutional amendment question last November, the legislature is required to statutorily transfer 10% of the MVEST revenues, equaling $56 million per year, from the general fund to transportation accounts annually. My bill, Senate File 187, would reallocate the MVEST funds so that by fiscal year 2012, again, 60% of the money is used for road construction, 35% supports metropolitan transit, and 5% assists Greater Minnesota transit needs. Unlike other proposals before you today, this bill does not contain any tax increases. Instead, this additional transportation revenue can be used to leverage approximately $1.7 billion in trunk highway projects and increase transit revenues throughout the state, transit services throughout the state, while still living within our means. At this time, I'd like to thank you for your time, Mr. Chair and committee members, and I will stand for any questions.
Great. Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. And what I had handed out, so you want to put one down again so people can, the audience can get some too. We just have handed out a run that our fiscal analyst, Krista Boyd, put together for folks who are interested. I know there's a lot of discussion about the various splits of the MVEST as it ramps up in the coming 5 years. This little run does include the leased vehicle dollars as well if that were to pass into law. So it's not quite the pure MBES, so we'd have to subtract. But I'll have Ms. Boyd explain it briefly to us.
Mr. Chair, this is just a comparison of the four major transit revenue split proposals that we've been hearing about. It assumes that 40% eventually will go to transit, and they're broken down, as you can see, 38.2, 37.3, 36.4, and 35.5. This one does include the leasing sales tax as well, and for the sake of simplicity, the leasing sales tax is assumed to be phased in at the same percentages as the MVEST. If you look in every piece, for instance, in the top of page 1, the 38.2 split, you can see the revenues. These are new revenues to transit as a result of this apportionment and the constitutional amendment. You can see at the top MVEST and how that will be split out between Metro and Greater Minnesota. The leasing sales tax, the same total revenue. And then at the bottom, there's a very rough estimate of budget growth compared to Metro Area Transit and Greater Minnesota Transit's 2007 budget.
Great. Okay. Very helpful.
Mr. Chair, if I
Senator
could.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Yes, I have somebody here from the to testify on behalf of this.
Thank Excellent. You. All right.
Hi, my name is Steve Peterson. I'm with Flaherty and Hood and the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities.
Welcome, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, we are here to support this bill. Why we do support the what we heard from Councilmember Riza in the big 2020 plan with the half-cent metro sales tax 31.9. We understand that budgeting circumstances in the state and what can pass and what will not pass, we really support a 35.5 split as opposed to a 8.2 split. A lot of people, when we talk, I don't want to rehash all the needs in Greater Minnesota that our Council Member Riza said before, but one of the things when we look at Greater Minnesota Transit, if you go to a 38.2 split, according to MnDOT's own numbers, that would not increase the service level in Greater Minnesota anywhere near to get to the goal of the 80% by 2010 and the 90% by 2020. Currently, it looks like it would take $182 million to get to the 2010 goal of 80% of needed services. The 35.5 split would not, of course, get us to our goal. It would not get Metro Council to their goal, but it would be a position that both people can work towards and grow our transit systems. It takes approximately $83 million of MVEST funding to make up for the MVEST shortfall in Greater Minnesota, the unfunded requests, which when Greater Minnesota transit organizations work a little different because they work through MnDOT. MnDOT helps them out decide what routes they're going to run, what kind of dollar ride service they're going to use, and they go to them and say, we need $5 million to run our service. MnDOT comes back and says, well, we don't have that, so they have an unfunded request. And secondly, when they do this at the same time, these same transit organizations say, if we had an extra $500,000, we could run a bus on Saturday or we could, expand our hours. When you add up the MBES shortfall, the unfunded request, and the unmet need, that's approximately $83 million, which is about 4.5, I believe, or something, a little bit less than that, of the MBES. And that's over a five-year period I'm talking of the phase-in. So, sorry, I'm a little confusing all the numbers here. But that does not look at expanding transit into counties that do not have any currently. That's just looking at our current transit operations in Greater Minnesota. So in closing, we love the 2020 bill. If you're going to split the MVES, not with that package that they're putting together, we would prefer a 35.5 to a 38.2, which doesn't grow Greater Minnesota Transit. So thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. And we hear you loud and clear. I'll just say for the record, I've been a strong advocate, one of very few advocates, even from my perch in Minneapolis, for Greater Minnesota Transit needs. In the past, I will continue to be a strong advocate for Greater Minnesota Transit needs, whatever the mix is that we come up with, whether it's in the MVEST that was passed last November or inclusion of the leasing sales tax, if we pass that Senator Bonoff's proposal, or inclusion of sales tax in the metro area so that metro needs projected, current and projected, can be satisfied, and that would allow some more flexibility on the MVEST side.
or if we go to a statewide sales tax generating new revenue for transportation purposes, we will look out for greater Minnesota transit needs and won't get anxious over the mix within that one source. So,
Mr. Chair, I appreciate
Thank you, Mr.
that.
Peterson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Any questions for Senator Ingebrigtsen or Mr. Peterson? Great.
Thank you very much.
I very much appreciate coming forward to articulate the need. With that, Senator Ingebrigtsen, we'll lay your bill on the table.
Thank you.
All right. Commissioner Dorfman is here, and she's on somewhat of a timeline, so we're going to pull up Senator Latz to talk about the Southwest Transitway Corridor, Senate File 1448. Welcome to the committee, Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. The Southwest Transitway Corridor is the significant light rail proposal for the to run from the Hiawatha line in downtown Minneapolis out to Eden Prairie, and maybe someday points beyond, but for now anyway, Eden Prairie would connect some major commercial hubs and residential areas as well. It would run through St. Louis Park on its way, which is why I'm the chief author of this proposal, but it would benefit the entire Southwest Metro region to try to provide more transportation options for people who need to get around. The next step in the process for planning this transitway is proposed for funding in the bill before you now. And to fill in a little more detail, I would like to ask Gail Dorfman, Hennepin County Commissioner, to make some remarks, and Katie Walker from the Hennepin County Office of Transit. I think we also have Jason Flores here from the Twin West Chamber of Commerce, the Director of Government Affairs, will be speaking in support of this as well.
Great. Thank you. Welcome, Commissioner Dorfman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Latz, for your leadership. We started looking at the Southwest Corridor almost 5 years ago as a potential viable transit corridor in the region. And when I say we, it's been Hennepin County along with the Met Council, Southwest Metro Transit, the five cities along this corridor from Minneapolis through St. Louis Park, Hopkins, Minnetonka, and Eden Prairie. And we were joined by the city of Edina in the most recent phase of study. Even though the corridor doesn't go through Edina, they're very interested in having a connection. And the chambers of commerce from all the areas, Minneapolis, the Twin West Chamber, the Eden Prairie Chamber, and the Edina Chamber, have been partners all along and have formed the Southwest Transitway Alliance to push this proposal. It's been really interesting as we've looked at route alignments along the corridor and station locations and started with the existing Hennepin County-owned corridor, but very quickly we realized that in order to adequately serve dense populations and get people to the places they needed to go, particularly jobs, that we would likely have to depart the Hennepin County corridor in order to serve high business nodes in Opus Triangle, the Golden Triangle in Eden Prairie, and Opus in Minnetonka. And so we've been looking at the best alignments, and there have been numerous folks from all five cities who have participated in this project all along. We've had numbers of open houses and newsletters, and there's been growing support. And I would, and I have to tell you that we started this before Hiawatha was running. And at the very beginning, there were folks in Minnetonka and Eden Prairie who formed a group called Trails No Rails, who were saying, we like our bike trails, our ped trails, but we don't really want trains running along it. And then Hiawatha came along, and we began, and we continued working with the neighborhoods. And there's been a sea change of opinion over the last year, where now when we go to meetings in Minnetonka and Eden Prairie, instead of saying trails, no rails, they're saying, how come we have to wait so long for transit? So there is a lot of public support. The communities have been working with a lot of due diligence
every step along the way, and we have finished the first two phases of study, narrowed the route alignments, and are preparing to enter the draft environmental assessment study, partnering with the Federal Transit Administration. So we thought this was the right time to come to the legislature as we also approach the federal government and say this truly is a state and local partnership that we are doing together as we approach the federal government for participation as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Dorfman. Any questions for Commissioner Dorfman? Senator Bono.
Hello, Mr. Chair. Hello, Senator, Ms. Dorfman. I'm sorry, I was just in a long committee meeting there, and so I just walked in and just wanted to echo those strong sentiments about Minnetonka being so excited about the transitway, and assumed you talked about the very warm reception at the hearing on the 28th. Did you cover that?
The Hennepin County Regional Rail Authority, thank you for reminding me, Senator Bonoff, had a public hearing, ultimately approved the recommendations coming from the Policy Advisory Committee, and no one testified against transit. Everybody testified in favor of transit. Certainly there's some discussion about which routes are the best. And I think one of the most interesting things that people see, particularly folks in Minnetonka, Eden Prairie, is the Southwest Corridor would be interlined with Hiawatha, really a seamless connection. So people could get to jobs downtown, people from the city could get to jobs in Minnetonka and Eden Prairie, you could get to the airport and to the Mall of America, and we really are beginning to see with Central and Hiawatha and Southwest and North Star, we're beginning to see a regional system that makes sense.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Dorfman, I was also referring to the Senate and House Joint Committee hearing that was in Minnetonka on February 28th, and Ms. Walker testified and did a great presentation, and we got so much positive feedback. So it was really an excellent presentation, and people talked in your absence about the work that you had done. So thank you.
We were talking about you, Commissioner. All right, Ms. Walker.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to just briefly talk to you a little bit about the work that Hennepin County has been doing, and just reiterating some of the things that Commissioner Dorfman had been talking to you about. This has been a partnership between the Hennepin County Rail Authority, the Metropolitan Council, Southwest Metro Transit, and the cities that would be potentially affected by this project. We did go through an alternatives analysis study. It's something required by the Federal Transit Administration. Its purpose is to look at a broad range of transit alternatives in order to narrow it down to those that best fit the travel needs of your community. We did go through that process. We looked at conventional buses. We looked at bus rapid transit and light rail transit. And through a process of evaluating those different transit alternatives, we narrowed it down to light rail transit as the preferred transit mode. And we have three routing options that we want to continue to evaluate. And we want to move into the draft environmental impact statement process, which is the next phase of project development. And through that process, we want to look at those three light rail alternatives and narrow them down to one that would be the preferred routing, and then look to do a federal New Starts application. So go to the federal government and request funding to implement that project. We do believe it would be part of a regional system of transitways that the region is looking to promote. So we do feel there's a very synergistic relationship between this proposed Southwest Light Rail line and the Hiawatha line that's existing today, the North Star line that will come on board fairly soon, and the Central Light Rail corridor. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Walker. Any questions for Ms. Walker? Great. Senator Latz.
I think Mr. Flores from Twin West Chamber would like to add some support, if I may.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, good evening. My name is Jason Flores. I'm Director of Government Affairs for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce, which is a business organization representing 1,000 member businesses in the western suburbs. But fully a third of our members are located outside of that 10-city area, so we truly do have a regional focus. I'm also here tonight representing the Southwest Transitway Alliance, with which Commissioner Dorfman mentioned previously, which is the Twin West Chamber of Commerce, the Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce, the Eden Prairie Chamber of Commerce, and the Edina Chamber of Commerce. Twin West has long been supportive of investment in a multimodal transportation system to move both people and products through the Twin Cities metro area. And as the Southwest Transitway has experienced unprecedented population and employment growth in the last 20 years and has become a major employment destination for the metropolitan region, more and more demands have been placed on existing roadways, and the inadequacy of the system now pales only in comparison with the future if nothing is done. So, in response to that, the Twin West Board of Directors has adopted a resolution in support of the Southwest Transitway, and Twin West and the Southwest Transitway Alliance fully support Senator Latz's bill, in addition to efforts by the Hennepin County Regional Rail Authority, the Metropolitan Council, the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and the Federal Transit Administration to fund and construct in a timely and fiscally responsible manner an LRT line through the Southwest Corridor. Transportation is one of the highest priorities for business in Minnesota, and we will continue to work to improve on decades of underfunding and take moderate and efficient steps forward to keep Minnesota business competitive, growing, and providing high-quality jobs. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify tonight, and I would also stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Flores. Any questions for Mr. Flores? No. Well, then I would, of course, invite the business community, echoing my colleagues in the past, to say well, we appreciate the leadership on behalf of specific facilities. It's going to be really, and it's easy to come up with some capital in our bonding bill. It's really hard to pay for their operations without some serious new sources of revenue. And we invite the business community, as others have in other metropolitan areas, to help us take the lead on that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to thank the Twin West Chamber for their leadership in this effort, and particularly Commissioner Dorfman, who has worked tirelessly for many years on to advance transit and this particular piece of the transit puzzle in particular.
All right. Thank you. Senator Latz, this is a bill that we're not going to lay on the table because we need to keep this thing moving on to it's not going to end up in our bill necessarily. It's going to move on to Senator Langseth's bill. So someone's getting their dinner, and then until she gets her dinner, we'll have a motion. All right. Senator Bonner.
I'm sorry. I moved.
We're ready to move the bill.
Okay. I move that we pass Senate file number
1448.
1448 to be laid over and included for possible.
Recommended to pass and move to the Transportation Committee.
Oh, recommended to pass and move to the Transportation Committee.
All right. Any questions, members? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
All right.
It's a long day.
All right. We have Senator Rummel in the room, so we will call Senator Rummel to the table. If you're in the room, you get to come on up. Senator Rummel, Senate File 1384, Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority Rush Line Corridor.
We're just gathering some of our witnesses.
Oh.
Good evening, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Welcome, Senator Rummel.
Members, I think we need to clone our senators. See, Senator Olson and Senator Bonoff, we just finished 3 hours in the room next door, and here they are in this committee. I'm going to give you a little bit of background on Senate File 1384. I'm new to the Senate, and I'm even new to this issue. The file or the Senate bill before you right now is a simple bill. It is here to request some money to acquire land to construct park and ride facilities up along the Rush Line corridor so that we can improve our bus service. As most of you know, the Rush Line has been under consideration since 1999. It will connect Hinckley to St. Paul. And it has a Joint Powers Committee of 19 members, including 5 counties, 14 cities and towns. I'm here partly because it moves right in the middle of my district, and when I was campaigning during the summer, if there was one thing I heard, it was our buses are going away, we have no way to get into town, and now that we have unweaved the weave, it's almost impossible to drive down 35E to get into work. So the Rush Line Corridor is an important component of the complete transit system that you are debating tonight. And I think it has both long-term and short-term value for us right now. The short-term value is because we do have immediate congestion due to the construction on 35E, and we have additional pressure put on 35E because of the growth up in Hugo and north of the Hugo area. So in White Bear, for example, where I live, the mayor tells me how congested Highway 61 and even our side streets are getting because people are bypassing 35E. In the long term, the Rush Line proposal that we have before you today will help prepare for an expanded transit service that will be highly needed on the east side of the metro area. The east side feels a little bit like an orphan these days, and we think that it's time to pay attention to us. With that, I'd like to turn the conversation and the technical explanation of the bill over to my guest here. We have with us Alicia Vapp.
Hi, thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, members. My name is Alicia Vapp, and I work for the Ramsey County Regional Rail Authority, and I'm a staff person on the Rush Line Corridor Task Force. And I just wanted to add to Senator Rummel that the task force has been very active in since 1999, as she mentioned. There are several communities, and we're also continuing to garner support along the corridor from other communities that are interested in joining. We have received some federal funds, so these state funds would be used to match some of the federal funds that Congressman Oberstar has been good enough to find for us from the Safety Lou Transportation Bill. And also, we are in the process of starting an alternatives analysis study, much like what the Southwest Project just completed, from St. Paul to Hinckley to look at different transportation problems in the corridor and to look at different modes of transit and different alignments that could address these problems. And that study will be concluded next year. We're also going to be starting a bus feasibility study, and that will be looking at potential commuter bus service which could be implemented in the corridor. So we're very excited about those two studies. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Sure, and if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Any questions? No. Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you. I'm Myra Peterson, and I did not know I was going to speak for the Rush Line, but I'm here tonight to speak for the Rush Line. I am chair of the Red Rock Corridor at the far end. And I think the important issue is that we are promoting a vision that the Rush Line is a part of that vision that goes to the Union Depot, and what we're advocating is a seamless system that will engage all of us to have the opportunity to use transit, not only from the west or the east, from the south and the north, that we truly are putting together a vision that encompasses all modes of transportation, and the Union Depot is, in fact, the ribbon that ties it all together. So it's good to be here tonight and to address this. I would also like to say that in Washington County, where we have trailways, we also have signs up on that trailway that says future line or rail. So, and I believe Ramsey County does also. And we are, in fact,
great advocates for this line.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Senator Saltzman.
I'd like to welcome Commissioner Peterson here, who has been just for me a mentor as I've taken this journey on transportation. I think it's important to note that we've had a lot of discussion tonight about the importance of transit in regards to the environment. And I believe it's also key to economic development that when we look at the potential in Minnesota as we become a leader in the sustainable energy and renewable energy field in terms of economic development, we're going to need to be able to transport people around and new workers and new businesses. So I think in that respect, we can't miss that argument as well. And thank you for being here tonight, Commissioner.
Great. Commissioner Peterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. If I might also add that it's very important to keep our core communities viable, we have to provide alternatives for our workers to get to work. And I think that's a real key issue.
Great. Well, let me also echo Senator Saltzman. How pleased I am to see so much coming now from the East Metro, so much advocacy, so many voices, so many proposals. I think, we started to get the ball rolling in my alliance and friendship with Senator Marco, and pleased to see Senator Sieben pick up the mantle and yourself and Senator Rummel and others. Of course, Commissioner Peterson has been a steady hand at the rudder all along, so it's refreshing. It's a new time, and I'm enjoying it very much. Senator Rummel, anything further?
We just stand for questions.
All right. I keep forgetting to ask on all of these bills if anyone in the audience would like to speak. So would anyone in the audience like to speak on this proposal? All right. Senator Saltzman, we do need to move this bill along.
I will move Senate File 1384 that it be passed and moved to the full transportation committee.
Any questions on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
All right. We're looking for Senator Larson. I see Ms. Erickson nodding her head. Okay. All right. Well, we do have Senator Carlson in the room, so we'll move on to Senator Carlson. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair and member of the committee.
Another member.
Members of the committee. Yeah. We're going to cover Senate File 1138, Motor Vehicle Sales Tax Dedication. And this is the a similar subject that we covered before. This is an alternative to dedication. This is the one that is supported by the governor. It's commonly called the 38-2. And what it would do is eventually get to 38% of the motor vehicle sales tax collections would go toward Metro Transit, and 2% would go for Greater Minnesota. And, of course, the remaining 60% would go to the Highway Trust Fund. With me today is Sarah Erickson from the Greater Metro Cities, and we will later hear from Amy Venowitz from the Department of Transportation.
Great. Yes, Sarah Erickson.
Thank you. My name is Sarah Erickson. I work for Metro Area Cities. We represent about 86 cities in the metropolitan area, about 90% of the population. And we are here today to speak on behalf of Senate File 1138. I think you have a handout in front of you. It has Metro Cities on the top. And it kind of clearly states our position. On the back, you will find the Journal of the House That was passed the day that Representative Earhart's amendment was passed in 2005. And Subdivision H clearly states that 38% of the money was to be deposited in the Metropolitan Area Transit Fund and 2% in the Greater Minnesota Fund. I believe that all groups, Greater Minnesota and the Metropolitan Area, have agreed to a 60% road split and a 40% transit split per the Earhart Amendment. And following in that line of thinking, we would also like a 38-2 split per the Earhart Amendment. And if you turn the page over again, you can we quickly kind of walk through how we see once the money is fully phased in, the kind of increases to the overall budget. And at a 35-5 split, like I believe you just saw, when it's fully phased in 2012, Greater Minnesota Transit will see a 42% increase to their overall budget, whereas Metro will receive only 25. And at a 38-2 split, like we are proposing, Greater Minnesota Transit will see a 7% increase in its overall budget, and the Metro will receive a 30% increase. I'd like to reinforce that the governor right now is supporting a 38-2 split, and under the 38-2 split, the Metropolitan Council can finish their 2020 transit plan by 2020. And that does include the Hiawatha, the Central, and North Star. And that is 13 years away from being completed. So the other corridor bills that we're hearing, the Rush Line and the Red Rock and 494 and 94 and 394, are quite a ways out under any other funding circumstance. So we are really supporting the 38-2. And with your indulgence, I'll have Amy Venowitz from the Metropolitan Council come up quickly and run through what this means for the Metropolitan Area budget.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Erickson? Ms. Venowitz.
I stand corrected. Amy Venowitz is the Deputy Director of Finance and Planning for Metropolitan Transportation Services of the Metropolitan Council.
Right. We knew that.
Mr. Chair, members, as he noted, Amy Venowitz with the Metropolitan Council. I think I'm really here more as a resource on some of the numbers, and just wanted to take the opportunity to reiterate what Ms. Erickson said, that in the 08-09 biennium, the governor's proposal of 38-2 really does represent a maintenance-level budget for the Metropolitan Council and also for Greater Minnesota. Under the 38-2 proposal in 08 and 09, neither of the transit systems will be experiencing the ability to expand our services, but will be able to maintain the existing services we have on the street today. So if you have any additional questions about the specific numbers on the split, I'd be happy to answer anything.
Any questions from the committee, including those who are dying? All right. Well, I would just say that, you know, fair is fair. I said this to the folks from Greater Minnesota. I'll say the folks to folks in Metro. We're not going to get overly anxious. I've said this before. We're not going to get overly anxious about the split within a confined source, because, of course, our goal is to recognize that, the 2030 plan, perhaps, which was once the 2020 plan, it should be again the 2020 plan, and that's going to call for significant leadership from ourselves, both in this committee and in the larger legislature, as well as everyone gathered in the room. So I understand people's need, and it's important for folks to bring these issues forward to our attention, because we do need to look at them and make the facts available to us and the need available to us, and I appreciate that. All right. Any questions? Anything further? All right. Senator Carlson, we will lay your bill on the table. All right. All right. We'll see about Senator Larson. We will suspend for one moment and see if Senator Larson, what's the word, Ms. Erickson?
I can talk about that.
Come on, it's more than 2%.
I've got three bills to present, too. So.
Are we going to...
Let's go up and see what she's got to say. All right.
Should we go ahead? Go ahead with another bill?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm presenting on Senate File 1411, which is a proposal to, it's a fairly robust and ambitious proposal. What it seeks to do is to coordinate paratransit services, special transportation services across the entire state so that we establish new standards of service new modes and new abilities for those who provide those services to cooperate with each other. It seeks to establish some minimal standards and statutes so that folks are served for more days per week and more hours per day and are able to take trips that get them across. But in our lives, we don't even think about as significant boundaries and jurisdictional lines, but those rely on those in the disabilities community who rely on paratransit services often can't get to the destinations that their busy lives require of them. And I think we heard some of that testimony when we were out in Burnsville, how the DART system has to bring folks up to a certain point, and then they pick up Metro Mobility, and the gap in time and the gap in service can be the source of extraordinary frustration, not severe additional impairment in their lives, their ability to work or avail themselves of social outlets and the like. And we believe that there are great opportunities to enter into service agreements that cross county lines, service agreements that cross certain types of providers. There's technology that allows us to coordinate requests for transportation, dispatching transportation, alike. It seems as if the private sector can do these sorts of things and figure out using fleet arrangements and funding sources and payment sources. Perhaps we could replicate those as well out in the paratransit service world, both in the metropolitan area and in greater Minnesota. We have Joel Euland here who can expand upon the proposal.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Joel Euland. I'm from the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, Minnesota chapter. I am also the co-chair of the Minnesota Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, a coalition of about 100 disability organizations that represent the organizations statewide. What we're here to present tonight is a vision, and the vision is that we would like to see a minimum of 14 hours of transit service available for people with disabilities in all 87 counties of the state. I think that when you look at the transit services that are currently available for people with disabilities, it is very uneven when you look across the state. When you look at Minneapolis-St. Paul, people with disabilities can use the Metro Mobility Program 24 hours per day. Now, there certainly is going to be people in those cities that will argue that even at 24 hours a day, the system isn't perfect, but it is available 24 hours per day. When you go out an additional ring of suburbs, that's where the service starts to decrease. where based on where Metro Transit goes, that is where Metro Mobility generally will go as well. And so it's not uncommon to have service that goes from 5 in the morning until 7 in the evening or 8 or 9 in the evening. And then as you go further out into some of the third ring suburbs, that's when you start to see service that ends even earlier than that. That's what goes on in the Twin Cities area. When you go out to greater Minnesota for people with disabilities, the services are much more distinct in the sense that there just isn't enough service available. I think that if this hearing was held in just about any other city besides Mankato, Duluth, Rochester, and St. Cloud, frankly, people with disabilities would have never been able to even think about coming this evening, because in most communities, the service ends at 4 or 5 in the evening. And so there's just no options for people. Certainly at the hour that we are at right now, getting home would also be an issue for people as well. And I think I wanted to point that out because that is the problem that people have. There's not much flexibility for being spontaneous and being able to come to and hearing such as this, or being able to go to a social event, a school event, or whatever the case may be for a person with a disability. What this bill does is that we are looking to increase the partnerships, as Senator Dibble had mentioned, between what is already available, the public transit that is available through the counties, but also looking at who are other providers that are out there. One service that is available in all 87 counties is the medical assistance transportation providers. And, you know, their fleet is also idle, generally, after 5 in the evening. Is there a way that we could be entering into contracts or some other service agreements that would allow those services to be available for people with disabilities to be used for just general purposes, for them to get to around to town or get groceries in the evening, whatever the case may be? I think one of the other frustrations that people with disabilities have is that, especially when they are out in greater Minnesota, the employment opportunities are, they're looking at it strictly by, can I get there or not? And when you look at a lot of the transit services that are out there in greater Minnesota, the service is only available for 8 hours per day or 9 hours per day. So it's very difficult for a person to work a full-time job if they're trying to get to that job and get back home again and still do that in the hours that are allotted. As has been mentioned earlier this evening, there's 7 counties that don't have any type of transit service available, and there's an additional 7 counties that do have transit service, but it's located in the county seat, and it's not available within the rural parts of that particular county. These are some of the things that our bill would address as well. One of the other things that I'd also mention is I mentioned earlier about the medical assistance rides. I think one of the frustrations that's out there for people with disabilities is how dysfunctional the transit systems are as it relates to what they can do to meet their daily needs. For example, medical assistance will provide transportation to help get people to get to a doctor's appointment. All of this is good. But if that doctor prescribes them a medication, when they go, they cannot use that medical assistance transportation provider to go to the the pharmacist to pick up the prescription. That's not an allowed use of medical assistance transportation. So that person has to go back home and either have the prescription delivered to them, or they need to take a public transit ride to go back out again and go get the prescription. I think one of the things that we're hoping to be able to do is by having these regionalized systems that would allow people to be able to call in and have essentially a one-stop shop in which the call-in center would be able to determine, is this a public transit ride? Is this a medical assistance ride? Who's picking up the cost? Who's dealing with the reimbursement? And frankly, save the hassle for people with disabilities. So to sum it up, this bill is bold. It's a proposal to look at what it is that we need. In a sense, this is a policy bill. Certainly, many of the other bills that have been discussed tonight have been funding bills. Ultimately, this bill is going to have to come to that as well, and we're going to have to discuss the funding pieces of it. But what we wanted to lay out for tonight was what is the policy that people with disabilities are seeking as it relates to transit services for people with disabilities. We also have one additional testifier, Gordy Haug, who's traveled from Crookston today to testify on this as well. And I'd stand for any questions.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Haug.
Hello, Madam Chairman, committee members. I work for a Center for Independent Living in northern Minnesota, and our main office is in East Grand Forks, Minnesota. I work out of the Crookston office. We have another office in Roseau, Minnesota, and one in Thief River Falls. It encompasses 8 counties: Kitson, Roseau, Marshall, Pennington, Red Lake, Polk, Norman, and Manoman. It's quite a difference from the Canadian border almost to Fargo-Moorhead, and then as far east as the Great Lakes. There's no fixed routes in these towns, even on a daily basis. Most of the towns, the bus comes in all of these areas once per week. So people are making their doctor's appointments and things on a weekly basis. If by chance the doctor's out of town or someone's sick that day, they have to wait another week to get an appointment. In town and things like that, if they have an appointment, they need to make that 24 hours in advance. There's no spontaneity. They cannot go out for a pizza, anything like that. Service ends at 4:30 because the buses in most of the local towns, at least in Roseau, Thief River Falls, and Crookston, the buses are picking up the disabled people from the occupational development centers and bringing them home. So other persons with disabilities can't really even get a job or maintain a job because the buses quit then at 5 o'clock. There's no Sunday service to attend church activities or to socialize, no weekend services. If you're a person with a disability and mobility issue there, the only way you can get places is by ambulance, unfortunately. The lack of the transit forces people to stay in their homes from 5 o'clock on Friday until 7:30 or 8 a.m. on Monday morning. And we do enjoy the flexibility and the ability to have our transportation cross county lines. That is one plus we have up there. But in summation, I just support this bill, and it'd be really great to have, you know, some of what you hear that's going on here with the rapid transit and the trains and things like this. It'd just be nice to have 14 hours a day. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your testimony. And I think, you know, nobody in our state wants people to be trapped in their homes from late Friday to early Monday morning. And so what you're bringing forward today, Senator Dibble and Mr. Huck, what you've talked about, and Mr. Euland, is very important to all of us here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you can, you know, kind of glance at the bill. It's pretty straightforward. It sets forth all the points that Mr. Euland described, allowing folks to schedule their service in advance, allowing them to same-day service for smaller trips, the 14 hours per day, the days per week, the inter-service agreements, and the like. But to be sure, this proposal will cost a lot of money. So, again, it's about articulating the need and the need to find resources to fulfill that need and a vision. Very, very exciting for Minnesotans and Minnesota.
Any other questions or members in the audience who wish to testify on behalf or in opposed to this bill? Very good.
That we can lay
entertain
this,
a motion.
We can just lay this bill on the table, Madam Chair.
Very good.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Senator Larson, Senate File 1305.
Welcome, Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Pleased to be here this evening to talk about transportation funding. And I have with me Sarah Erickson from Metro Cities, who will help with testimony this evening. Mr. Chair and members, the proposal in Senate File 1305 is to provide for the opportunity to generate a half-cent sales tax, if fully implemented statewide, for use for funding our transportation system over the next 20 years. Mr. Chair, I would follow your lead. Do you want me to walk through the details of the bill, or do you want me to concept?
Senator Larson, we have a an amendment to delete all.
I do. If someone would be willing to move that amendment, I'd be grateful.
Senator Salzman offers the A1 delete all amendment. This is a author's amendment. This is the bill's first hearing in its Committee of Original Jurisdiction. All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion passes. Senator Larson, I think, you know, a quick 40,000-foot highlights are fine. We don't have to do
hit the highlights, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, and we don't have to do a detailed walkthrough.
All right. I think
we have a pretty strong sense of the proposal already.
So. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll hit the highlights on Senate File 1305, which is a proposal that I believe is an aggressive one that can be a piece to our at least a piece of our transportation solution in Minnesota. Just to hit the highlights without getting into too much detail, we provide for a half-cent sales tax that can be levied in the metropolitan area upon approval of a referendum within the seven-county metro area. We allow for, and then we also create in the legislation a joint powers agreement, or we allow the communities in the metropolitan area to enter into a joint powers agreement for the purpose of levying and spending the proceeds of the tax. The joint powers board would consist of one elected official from each county in the seven-county metro area and one elected city official from each county that would be appointed as well, with the purpose of coming up with a plan on how to spend these additional dollars in the metropolitan area. In addition to that, Mr. Chair and members, we create the opportunity for two counties, any two counties in greater Minnesota, to get together upon approving their sales tax and levying that tax as well for projects in their part of the state. Mr. Chair, this is a proposal that has been has gotten the support of the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities, better known as Metro Cities. Just 2 weeks ago, I think it was, we had upwards 20 metro mayors that joined us to introduce this legislation in coming together with one common theme that we cannot afford to move any further into our future without a dedicated source of revenue for transportation, especially as we face our crisis and as I'm focused on investments in the metropolitan area. Mr. Chair, members, we heard today in Transportation Committee a number of legislators come forward with proposals. I was before this subcommittee last week asking for funds for a new start on the 494 corridor. We want light rail transit in the South Metro to connect Southwest Corridor and Hiawatha. There are new starts as it relates to rail all over our metropolitan region. There are communities all across the state whose transportation needs aren't being met, and this is an attempt to address that. Mr. Chair, I think everyone in the legislature understands that we can think up the ideas on how to spend the money, but without a mechanism to raise the money and levy the tax, all of those ideas are probably nothing more than a waste of paper that they're printed on. And so, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for your commitment to being willing to take on the challenge of finding the right package for us to move Minnesota forward. This is my contribution to that, in believing that we need to bring forward every idea that is reasonably possible for consideration and explore every opportunity, because if we fail in this endeavor, to provide leadership on transportation for our state will have failed not only this session and next session, but we'll fail an entire generation of folks who are counting on us to have the infrastructure in place for a competitive, strong region for our future. Mr. Chair, I'll stop there. I know that Sarah Erickson from Metro Cities would like to provide some testimony on this proposal and be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Senator Larson. Well put. Any questions for Senator Larson? Welcome to the committee, Ms. Erickson. Senator Bonoff, excuse me.
Mr. Chair, I always have questions. Senator Larson, are you open to, in this particular vehicle, also then including the communities beyond the seven-county metro who may also want to take advantage of this to put measures like this on their ballot so that they can do that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, actually that is in the proposal, and I know I went over it very quickly because of the interest of time, but actually we do allow for a minimum of two counties to join together to levy that tax. And so you could have, for example, probably would be most likely two counties in a regional center, maybe three counties, four counties that would make up a regional center that would get together and decide they need some additional transit dollars, or perhaps they need some additional dollars to fix roads, a super project in one of our interregional corridors. And so I think there is opportunity in this bill for the entire state.
Thank you, Senator Larson. I see that now.
Thank you, Senator Bonner. Ms. Erickson.
Hi, Sarah Erickson, Metro Cities. Thank you again for allowing me to testify. I just have two things really quickly. I first wanted to draw your attention to a survey that was passed out that you probably saw. Like Senator Larson alluded to, he and Representative Hortman held a press conference last week, and after that, KSDP did a survey, and the question was asked, would you support or would you oppose a 0.5% increase in the Twin Cities Metro sales tax to pay for road improvements? And as you can see by the graph, there was a 53% in support of that, and we were very pleased with that response without any education, that high level of response. And secondly, there was a handout. There was two articles, one from the Star Tribune and one from the Pioneer Press, that also took place right after the press conference, and we were pretty excited about the amount of energy that one press conference around this idea held. So I think that's a testament to the hunger for actual funding. How much there is out there. I guess I just wanted to bring your attention to two things maybe that Senator Larson didn't touch on. One is the what you can spend the money on. I know you've heard a couple proposals tonight that have pretty specific ideas of where the money is going. In our bill, you can spend it on highway projects from the commissioner's current 10-year work plan. You can spend it on public transit out of the 2030 transportation policy plan. Counties and cities can spend it on local roads, and it can also be used for operating capital assistance for transit, which I know is also an issue. And finally, maybe to Senator Bonoff's Collar County question, just maybe the four right outside. I know there's some discussion about enlarging the metropolitan area to include at least those four counties, and we would be more than happy to have that discussion and actually probably think it's a good idea. And with that, if there's no questions, I will be done.
Any questions for Ms. Erickson? I'll just say I appreciate bringing forward the poll, and what struck me about the poll when I heard it the other day was that this is, you know, just a straight-up question, absent, you know, folks being able to really talk about specific proposals and facilities and, you know, kind of paint out the vision that Senator Bonoff did such a nice job with at her PowerPoint presentation at the hearing in Minnetonka. And I suspect that that 53 would become something much larger than that if we were able to really put something in front of folks' eyes and then ask the question. So, all right. Senator Larson.
One comment to that, Mr. Chair, and I think that, you know, there's some additional positive feedback from seeing a poll like that, and perhaps we shouldn't jump to conclusions about how the public is responding. But I think, you know, we've seen with gas tax increases, sales license tab increases, there's sort of a user fee linkage to a lot of the different options that we have in the area of transportation. And those are things that I think deserve good deal of consideration. But what I think is important about this poll is I think this shows that at least folks responding to this aren't requiring that link to be there anymore either. I think it means that they're elevated in terms of their concern about our lack of transportation funding. And I think that, you know, is buttressed by the arguments that were brought to us by Congressman Oberstar and just a general growing feeling that if we're not moving forward, we're moving behind. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Larson and Ms. Erickson. All right, and we will lay Senate file 1305 on the table. Great. Okay. I think we're going to – I know that a couple folks wanted to testify on MBEST generally, not speaking necessarily to a specific bill. Jason Flores and Aaron Sexton from the Twin West and from the Minnesota Chamber. You're welcome to come forward. And likewise, I'll just issue the general invitation because I failed to invite folks to come forward previously on other bills, if anyone – see someone waving his hand. So once you we'll call you up next. Or if folks want to come up and speak generally on sales tax or some other subjects that have been raised this evening. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good evening. My name is Jason Flores. I'm Director of Government Affairs for the Twin West Chamber of Commerce, also here representing the Metropolitan Coalition of Chambers. Twin West has long been supportive of increased investment in a multimodal transportation system. Some of our first communications, as I testified before, Hennepin County came dated in 1981 when we first started talking with the City of Minneapolis and Hennepin County about light rail options in our neck of the woods. I would like to provide some brief comments tonight about the idea of a metropolitan or of a statewide sales tax increase for transportation, simply to provide a word of caution and maybe put this into more context in a big picture, 40,000-foot view, as you mentioned earlier. Passage of the Transportation Amendment last November was only the first step in solving Minnesota's transportation challenges, and Twin West and MCC also support a balanced and moderate increase in ongoing transportation amendment in ongoing transportation investment, the details of which I've previously outlined in front of this committee, both in Minnetonka and in Brooklyn Park. There are a number of proposals to increase the sales tax in the seven-county metropolitan area, and although the need to fund transportation and transit remains great, we do have some concerns with the utilization of the sales tax. First, the sales tax is a significant business tax. According to the Department of Revenue, businesses pay about 45% of that tax, which equates to more than $2 billion each year. In the long run, we'd like to see the sales tax base reformed to reduce the burden on Minnesota businesses by eliminating business inputs from the base. Tax policy experts agree that the sales tax base should not include these business inputs, and by continuing to grow the sales tax in its current form, reform becomes more difficult as more and more constituencies rely on the sales tax as currently structured for financing. According to a 2005 study by the Council on State Taxation, businesses in 28 states pay a smaller share of the sales tax burden than here in Minnesota, while five additional states do not have a sales tax at all. Minnesota is a high sales tax state and has a high overall tax burden, ranking at 10th in the nation in state and local tax burden, according to the Minnesota Taxpayers Association. A better ranking than that is necessary to be competitive nationally and internationally. Although businesses do look to our transportation infrastructure when determining where to locate, they will look harder at our tax structure. While Phoenix, Denver, and San Diego are often cited for their impressive transportation investments using a metro area sales tax, it's important to understand that these cities had the capacity to do so. Even now, after additional taxes have gone into effect, these cities still have overall tax burdens much lower than we have here in Minnesota. And I do have a chart that lists out some of that information if committee members are interested. There's no doubt that a sales tax, either metro-wide or statewide, would benefit transportation projects, but it cannot be considered in isolation, and it needs to be – the needs of transportation need to be balanced against many other interests in the state budget and also against other competitive pressures facing Minnesota and the business community. With that, thank you for the time and the opportunity to testify this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Flores. Ms. Sexton.
Well, I know it's been a long night, so I'll be very brief and basically say ditto. The Minnesota State Chamber actually shares many of the same concerns as that the Twin West Chamber has just laid out as far as increasing the sales tax to fund transit and transportation projects. And just the only addition I will make to that is we have asked our members on a number of occasions through, whether it's through the Business Barometer Poll, which is of the statewide business community, or of our general membership, and our members do not support a increase in the sales tax at this time for transportation and transit projects. So we are a membership organization. I just want to bring that to your attention. We want to continue to move forward on transportation funding. 73% of our members support greater investment in both transportation and transit. Transit needs to be a piece of the solution, and we'll continue to look at ways, the best ways to fund it. But given our current sales tax structure, we don't think that that's the way right now. So thank you for the committee's time.
Well, thanks to both of you, and I'll just respond by saying excellent testimony and some points you raise I agree with. Some of the reform proposals for the sales tax are worthy of considering. I would also suggest a slightly different perspective as folks are considering where they're going to locate their businesses as employees or considering where they want to live. Certainly the quality of life and also the ability to move around goods and services are significant business decisions as well. I would encourage the leadership of the local chambers and the state chamber to also think about what we pay in costs that are imputed by the lack of mobility, the well-known congestion tax that we pay, the tax we pay personally in our personal family budgets when we're forced to maintain additional automobiles. So what's the cost of our development when we have to build out in a sprawled environment and parking, and what is the cost to our environment when we're relying heavily on automobiles? So there's a balance to be struck here between the kinds of real dollars and cents that go to your bottom line, as well as kind of those that we don't necessarily see quite so literally every day. Senator Saltzman.
I guess, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to make a comment that I've talked to a lot of people who have come to my office. I've talked to the businesses in my community, and they have transportation at the top of their agenda many times. And so I'm just a freshman here, but I do know that we're going to be making some big decisions in the next few weeks on, funding and projects. And if we hear from, the people in our state and from our businesses that they don't want to invest in these things, then I don't know why we're listening to a lot of these proposals, because we can't do it without new investments. So I guess, as I've told people who have come to speak to me about many different things, I'll say, well, if you don't like what we're proposing, I hope that you'll come with something to fund these proposals. But I don't hear anything. So I'm just at a quandary here, because I've heard so much about, the economic development, especially in the East Metro, as I've talked to the St. Paul Chamber about the things that we're so excited about with this Eastern Transportation Alliance. I've said, you have everything to gain and everything to lose if we aren't a player in the transportation infrastructure that's being developed. We're just going to continue to be a hole in the East Metro, and the development and the businesses are going to go somewhere else. So I've challenged them to come forward with some ideas, and so I hope that after tonight we've heard a lot of exciting things. I hope that we can start to look at, where is the support, what can we rally around in terms of a revenue source to fund these kind of projects. So I'm willing to listen. I hope that we do hear proposals instead of what won't work, maybe what will.
Thank you.
So, I'll put.
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to offer some of the things that we think might work tonight. But like I said, I know you've had a long night, and I'd be happy to talk with you further about increased funding that we do support.
Thank you.
Mr. Flores.
I agree 100%. I'd be happy to have a conversation at some other earlier hour, if that's preferable.
Well, I think we actually are familiar with the chamber proposal. We just don't think there's enough money in the proposals you guys have shared with us to date. I mean, we're talking about, seriously competing with the Charlottes and the Denvers and the Portlands and the
even St. Louis, and we're just not competing with them. And I heard what you said about the relative burden. So let's talk about a full package instead of just simply fighting those who are putting together proposals that do come up with the real dollars. We need to compete with those regional areas. All right, Senator Carlson.
Ms. Sexton, I'm wondering if you have done any work on finding out what the congestion tax costs businesses and how much they're passing on to the consumer.
Specific to business? Excuse me, Mr. Chair, thank you. I don't know what that cost is specific to business. I know we have the same information from the Texas Transportation Institute that does break out congestion costs. And it is a concern. We definitely hear from our members that they and their employees are spending more time, and you know, whether it's a firm trying to move their goods through the metro area or trying to move them on the greater Minnesota roads safely, we do support greater investment in transportation. I think the disagreement is about what level that funding and investment should be at this session, and we'll continue to work with you on that.
Hey, Mr. Chair, Ms. Sexton, do you realize that at this point we are at the lowest level of cost of our cost of fuel as a percentage of that fuel? Yes. We used to have taxes that were on the level of about 16% to 20%. For instance, starting in 1950, we spent 19% of the cost of fuel was Minnesota tax. Today, at $2.40, it's about 9%. Of our fuel cost is in Minnesota taxes. We have dropped dramatically since 1988, the last time that we did increase the Minnesota gas tax. And also, I guess when you do talk about the Minnesota business climate, I would like to hear what state has a better business climate than Minnesota and why. Are you aware of a state that has a better business climate than Minnesota?
Ms. Sexton, sure.
I think it depends on, I don't know how to even begin to get into that debate with you right now. And, you know, I think businesses look at a lot of different indicators when they're deciding where to site their business or where to grow their business. And I'd be happy to have a broader discussion with you at some point, and it would probably be more appropriate to have Bill Blazer, our Vice President of Business Development, could probably give you a little better view of what those drivers are versus myself. But we'd be happy to have that discussion and would appreciate it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Senator Carlson.
I would like to make one more comment about that Minnesota has a very good business climate, and as a matter of fact, we have 19 Fortune 500 companies in this state. We have the highest percentage of Fortune 500 companies per capita in the United States. We have a higher level of Fortune 500 companies than any other state in the nation. So I would suggest that we have a very good business climate here. And this is something that I think, you know, I know we have had that brief conversation before, that the members of the Chambers of Commerce, some of them fight these taxes, and some of them are asking me to fight for these taxes. The small business is now being deadlocked out in my area because they can't cross the river. They want us to invest in transit. They want us to invest in transportation. I hear that constantly, and I think I'm hoping that some of your members speak up for these small businesses that are coming to me and asking me to fight for more investment.
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, I appreciate that, and I want you to invest more in transportation. Like I said, I don't think the debate is over whether we should invest more in transportation. I think it is what's the level, and I think Senator Dibble maybe pointed out our disagreement and what that level should be. And we'll continue to have that discussion and hopefully find a place that we can all come down on and move Minnesota forward in transportation funding and investment.
Great.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Sexton, thank you for that, and I'm hoping that we can work together on it.
Thank you, Senator.
All right. Okay.
Senator Dimple.
Chair, thank you. Well, my goal, secret goal, now I can say it out loud, is to get out of here before 10. Hopefully we'll manage to do that with these next two bills. Madam Chair, we have Senate File 1498, which is an agency bill from the Metropolitan Council, which deals with the oversight of the construction of rail facilities. It deals with some of the governance issues. I think members are aware that the Hiawatha Light Rail Corridor light rail line was built by MnDOT and is now, of course, operated by the Metropolitan Council. And this would allow the Met Council the discretion of the governor to designate the Metropolitan Council as the lead agency for the construction of the light rail line. I think it makes some sense, maybe a little inconsistent with an earlier bill that I presented, but you know, we'll work that out. You know, but under the current regime, it makes some sense that the transit agency, the agency that is more explicitly concerned with transit, is the constructing agency. And of course, we hear repeatedly from MnDOT, despite their role in Greater Minnesota Transit, that they're really not concerned with transit. So it makes some sense to me. So with that, we'll have Mr. Shetton explain the details of the bill.
Mr. Shetton.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'd like to thank Senator Dibble for carrying the bill for us, our bills for us again. I really appreciate that. One thing that I'd like to say to the committee and the members of the audience, that the testimony that was presented earlier by Ms. Summers from the Amalgamated Transit Union and the fine work that they do, I would like to recognize that the council recognizes their hard work as well, and we appreciate everything that they do. We couldn't be more prouder of our drivers and the folks who work in our facilities. We had 91% on-time transit Thursday and Friday morning, and that is incredible. And I just
want to... That's amazing.
Madam Chair and members, it is, and it's not lost on us. I'd like to share with the committee and everyone here that how proud we are of them as well, and they really make our transit system work. So just wanted to make sure I remembered that when I was sitting back here hearing all the other bills. So thank you for that opportunity.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dibble.
May I first offer the A1 amendment? It's a technical fix.
Senator Dibble offers the A1 amendment.
I believe it conforms to current practice. It takes transit fixed guideways out of a requirement on the State Transportation Board. It makes it consistent with this bill, if I'm understanding the amendment correctly.
All those in favor of the A1 amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. A1 amendment is approved.
Great. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, I think Senator Dibble did a fantastic job of explaining this bill. It's relatively simple. Current legislation that deals with light rail transit basically has MnDOT building the lines, and it has the council operating them. What we're asking here is just to let the governor, at his discretion, to designate the council as the lead agency for construction of light rail. This is the setup that we have set for Central Corridor. We think it's a good bill. The governor obviously supports this. Our friends at MnDOT support this as well, and I think it's fairly straightforward. So, with our eye on the clock, I will stand for questions if there are any.
Any questions for Mr. Shetland or for Senator Dibble?
Great. Madam Chair, we'll lay this bill on the table. Even though it's policy, it probably will go into the larger.
Very good. Now, before we move on, is there anybody from the audience who would like to speak on behalf of this bill or in opposition or the previous bill? Very good.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair, we can move quickly on to Senate File 1513. Madam Chair, Senate File 1513 undoes something that was done
a number of years ago, it would confine the ongoing operation and maintenance costs of a transit project limited to 10%. Would limit its capital costs somewhat and eliminate its operations contribution. Madam Chair, this has to do, of course, with the Hiawatha Light Rail Transit when it became operational. And, of course, we were experiencing some revenue declines. And, of course, we had taken the transit, the Metropolitan Transit operations off of the Metropolitan Area Property Tax, and then were unable to correspond with the general fund monies that were anticipated that were going to replace that, and kind of as a last-minute, last-ditch fix, Hennepin County property taxpayers were asked to pick up fully 50% of the cost of the Hiawatha Light Rail. That seems to somehow now become some sort of a state policy, which is at some variance to how we do regional roadways. Those state roads and interstates, we don't ask the adjacent property owners or the local unit to pay for fully 50% of its of those operations. So it's an inconsistency in our transportation policy, we're just reminding folks that there was a reason why we took operations or transit off the Metropolitan Area Property Tax. When we went to take that action on Hiawatha Light Rail, it was in the midst of a bit of a crunch and a crisis, and frankly, a lack of leadership on the part of those leadership at the time. So we would like to return to that policy. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't have counties and local authorities take the lead in acquiring and assembling land and participating in the capital effort around this transit infrastructure. And we see that often happening with roads too, of course, but we need to really get back to the established state policy assumed in all of the more visionary bills that we've heard this evening, that we would have the resources necessary to operate all the transit lines that we have and the transit service we have envisioned for the metropolitan area in greater Minnesota. And did anyone want to testify?
Yes. Commissioner McLaughlin, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'll be representing the Hennepin County Board tonight and also the Metro Transit Ways Development Board on this policy statement. We support a county rail.
Please state your name.
I'm sorry,
the
Peter McLaughlin. Peter McLaughlin, sorry. We support a capital contribution to the rail transit line. We think that's appropriate. It's a sort of a grub stake for lines. It indicates an indication of a seriousness on the part of the counties in advocating for these lines. It helps with cash flow, as I indicated in my earlier testimony. And I think, though, that what we're advocating now is that ought to be reduced to a 10% contribution that as a matter of policy. It's been sort of evolving on a project-by-project basis to a 17% contribution. We think it ought to be established as a 10% contribution. But we do think, we do support the notion of a capital contribution from the counties as we go forward. We are very strongly opposed, though, to the operating contribution to the operating costs of rail transit projects. That was something that's been embedded in appropriations riders, as Senator Dibble indicated, came during the budget crisis. It's, I think, antithetical. It was never part of the original agreement on Hiawatha. We were making a capital contribution. We were never, and I had to testify in front of the Senate and House tax committees that we had no intention of paying for the operating costs, and then it comes back and rears its head through an appropriations rider that we had nothing to do with. But to say that counties ought to be levying for this, in Hennepin County's case right now, the levy that we have to impose just to pay for our share of just Hiawatha, it's over 1% of our overall county property tax levy. And it's about 50% of our rail authority levy, just to give you a sense of scale. So this thing is serious money. I would argue it's very bad policy. This is supposed to be a regional transit system. Got to be paid for with regional sources. The operating costs ought to be paid for out of regional sources. If you think about a park and ride at Fort Snelling, for example, If you took a survey of who's on that getting on that train, there are people from Dakota County. I mentioned the folks from New Ulm coming up. I mean, there's a whole host of people who are using this system. It's supposed to be a metro system, and we ought not to be having special rules for rail transit. And that's what this is. Doesn't apply to buses, doesn't apply to roads. It applies to rail transit. And some of us, it was put in under the guise of dealing with the financial crisis, but the fact of the matter is, something in my mind, some of the impetus for this was to try to create a poison pill, to try to suppress interest by counties in pursuing rail transit projects. I'm arguing, it applies to Hennepin County today, but as we move forward on North Star, it's going to hit Sherburne and Anoka counties as well as Hennepin. When we go to Central, it's going to apply to Ramsey County, and it's going to continue to grow. We believe it ought not be on the property taxpayers, and we ought to be financing this as a part of the regional transit system. There are some who argue, and I'll try to anticipate the argument here that's going to come back, that, oh, there's all sorts of development that comes along with these infrastructure investments in rail transit. I believe in that, and it does happen. But it happens with busways. It happens with roads, as well as with rail projects. So why are we, again, special rules for rail projects that don't apply? Moreover, is a reflection of the benefit that counties get from this development. We are advocating a contribution by counties on the capital side. We think that is appropriate, not on the operating side. And so we think that this is an important piece of policy to be made. It ought not be left to some appropriations rider at the end of the session. This subcommittee and the full transportation committee ought to set this policy and get back to a rational basis for the policy, not just sort of dealing with a financial crisis and maybe putting a little jab in at the rail projects, which has been kind of the history of this. So, Madam Chair, I hope we're very strongly supportive of this bill.
Well, Commissioner, I think you're comments and your testimony underscores what we've been trying to accomplish all session, and that is addressing the underfunded nature of transportation and the lack of a transit and appropriate, comprehensive plan. And so I think by putting this language forth, we're saying that in every opportunity that we have, we are saying that this is an unacceptable means of doing business, and so this is consistent with that. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'll just conclude by saying that this is also consistent with our larger goals as in the Senate and in the House to recognize that we haven't been in a no-tax environment over the past few years. We've just been foisting a lot of taxes from the state level onto property taxes, and this is just another instance where we've done that. Additionally, I've observed for the years since this was done on the Hiawatha Light Rail Transit, kind of a gun being held to the head of locals saying, well, if you want this to come through your district, you're going to have to pass a resolution and a statement saying that you're going to pick up part of the operating. We don't do that on highways. It's just, the time has passed when transit is a stepchild or an also-ran or an add-on or an afterthought, and this policy would get us further to that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, we can put this bill on the table as well.
Very good.
Great. All right. Madam Chair, have any other business? Nope. Business at your desk? All right. With that, I think
meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Yes.